the NFL Draft. News on number 4. Draft coverage, live, local, late breaking.
Well, at least 9,000 things aren't going on at the same time. Oh, wait, they are. Let's circle back to football here for a little bit, Wolf, because we still have our football team. So let's talk about that while we have it, right? Monty Austin Ford, Jonathan Gannon were speaking earlier today. Was there, I know you were writing stuff down and I was writing a bunch of stuff down. I got a bunch of Monty quotes here. Was there anything specifically that jumped out to you? Because I'm pretty sure there was.
Yeah, there were some things. I wrote them down in order that I heard them. And the very first thing was volume of picks and the more swings at the plate. And this is something that the Baltimore Ravens, this is a philosophy that the Baltimore Ravens have, I think, perfected for the most part over the years, of course, as an organization in terms of drafting players. And I think it's something that Monty Austin Fort and JG they're trying to replicate that right here. More picks, quality picks, and quantity of picks as well. The more guys you can actually get into your organization, the more opportunities you have of hitting on one of them.
Yeah, here's Monty talking about that earlier today.
It's one of those things where I could say it gives us a lot of flexibility, but as with anything, you need a partner. And so you need to find someone who's willing to move. And we have to be willing to move one way or the other, up, move down, and you got to find a dance partner on the other end. So, I could come in here and say, hey, we want to move all the way around, but if nobody wants to move, then we can. And I could say, hey, we want to sit here and stand pat with all 11, and somebody comes with an offer that changes my decision. So that's not entirely up to us with all those picks. So that's why we got to just stay flexible and stay ready to go no matter what comes our way.
I thought it was interesting, Wolf. I think you said they're big board is 95% to 98% complete.
Yeah, I love that.
And I mean, you want your GM, you want your team in any sport to be prepared well ahead of time heading into the draft. But doesn't Monty seem like the guy that like did his homework the second the teacher handed it out and was like done before class was even over?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this is due next week. Monty, why are you already turning yours in? But that is a great characteristic to have because it allows you to be adjustable and make some moves on draft night.
And you know I love this stuff, Matt, because honestly, as a player-based earnings, I never got a chance to experience this stuff, Luke. I never got a chance to do it. As a player, of course, you're playing the game of football right now. How do you actually go about this stuff? That's what the logistics of it all, right?
Yeah.
How do you actually pull it off? How do you do this? The board is pretty much set. Okay, you're telling me it's 5%? I think JG actually said 5%. We got a 5% that we still have got to get to set our board. What is that? Is that at the top or is that at the bottom?
I would hope that's at the bottom.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what is that? Because are you really going to spend that much time? You got 5%. You can't kick that out of the bottom of the board?
You know, JG was like, if we weren't here doing this press conference, we would be done with those 5% right
so
now.
So what is going on right now? You know, it tells me, this is just my gut feeling right now. It tells me that maybe there are some, due diligence that is being done right now on some of the top candidates. Maybe they got a lead. They got a story. Maybe there's this. We've just got to find out. We've got to trace this story. This story that we heard, we got to see it to the end, and then we'll go ahead and maybe set our board after. In other words, I think it could do something. It could be something about a person, not a player, but a person, so to speak.
Well, he referenced that quite a bit. Here's Monty on their draft philosophy this year.
Good players, right people, can't get enough of them. So that will always be our draft philosophy, picking the right people. Good people, good players, people that fit what we're trying to do, both on the field and off the field. We can't go wrong if we draft those people.
And see, then Gannon followed up on that because I think the question was like, what if you get a good person, but they're not really good at football? You know what I mean? And Gannon followed up when he was asked, how important is it to to get the right people? Like, how much emphasis are you putting on that?
Very. I think that's what wins. You know, team first people, team first players, when they understand that and they live that, and that's how they go about going through their daily routine, I think that's what wins. So that's something that is really cool, because I know we're very aligned on that.
Yeah, very aligned right there. Good players. Good players. How do you determine whether a guy is good? Watch the tape. Over and over and over and over again. Watch the tape.
Over and over.
That's right.
Over and
no, Marshawn.
Over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Yes, watch the tape.
And over and over and over and over and over again.
Yes, and then, you know what? There's a lot of investigation that goes on into the person, and you've got to have those two things. There are some teams out there, my brothers, I will tell you this right now, there are some teams that really don't value the whole person thing. Hey, you can't have a bunch of choir boys. Can't have a, and I get that, and I understand that. You don't want a bunch of choir boys out there playing football, as my old coach used to say, right? But you do have to research and investigate the person, not just the player, the person. The player's there. You can see the player on tape. The hardest part is to actually get any type of background or foundation on the person behind that face mask. And that is something that this regime, Monty Ossenfort and JG, value greatly.
All right, when we come back, I'm looking at a lot of tweets that say the sale of the Coyotes has been approved by the league. I don't think this is like a mass hallucination, so they are heading to Salt Lake City. We'll get into that next. It's Wolf and Luke in Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Wolf and Luke with today's MLB standings. Brought to you by America Roofing, Arizona's number one residential and commercial roofing company. They've got you covered.
Let's take a look at these NL West standings. Diamondbacks losing yesterday, but San Diego and the Dodgers have both lost their most recent games, too. So Dodgers 12-9, Padres a game back at 11-10. D-backs a game back of the Padres at 9-10, then the Giants 8-11, and Colorado 4-15.
You know what's amazing about it right now? The Dodgers got off to a very, very hot start, and they've cooled as of late. 4-6 in their last 10, and now the Diamondbacks, a mere two games behind the LA Dodgers in the NL West.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Think about it. The Diamondbacks, as disappointing as the start has been, and there are reasons why they're 9-10, yet at the same time, they're two games back in the NL West. And I know it's so early to look at that, but that kind of surprised me this morning.
Yeah, I mean, it is early, but we are almost an eighth of the way through the season, so it's not like it's nothing, you know what I mean? But look, we know the Dodgers are going to turn it on here at some point. Right now, they are basically record-wise tied for the eighth best record in baseball. The Dodgers, you figure that's going to be a lot closer to one or two by the end of the regular season. But also, I mean, that same logic can work for the D-backs. A good team probably going to get better over the course of the season.
Yeah, just to see, only two games back in the NL West.
Yeah. All right, over to hockey, and this is Andre Tourney after the game last night. Todd Walsh, when we had him on earlier, you know, referenced how impressive it's been the way Bear has handled it. And look, we have Bear on the show every week. We talked to him last week. He's always the most jovial guy in the world. Now, I know as a coach, he can be pretty intense, but when he's on the show, he's always very jovial. He was not last week. He was very, I mean, he was in the same spot all of us were with this. He spoke after the game last night. And, you know, when he talked to us last week, he was like, look, we're going to learn from what happened to us at the end of January when these rumors first came out. And it was weird looking back now, Wolf. These rumors have been coming out for a dozen years, right? But the ones when they came out in late January, the Coyotes promptly went from playoff contending team to losing 14 straight the 14. Day they came out. And then when they kind of were able to snap out of that with a win, then they were an above 500 team again the rest of the way. So don't be surprised if the Coyotes, which is probably what I'll still call them next year when they're in Utah, make the playoffs in Utah next year. That's very much on the
table. I just want to say this as well in regard to Bear. this guy is a leader of men. And I have so much respect for dudes who are like this. He is a leader of men, Andre Tourney. Make no mistake about this right now. The organization, whatever organization that Salt Lake is getting, I don't even know the name. Do you have any idea what they're going to call it?
I don't care.
Way too soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
For that, I don't know if they already came up with something.
There's rumors out there. Who knows?
Knowing that they were probably going to move months ago.
Maybe they've had a name for a year. Who knows?
Exactly. So, but to me right now, they're getting a great coach. And I think it's one of the reasons why we're so bullish on this team turning it around, and maybe as soon as next year.
Yeah, finally drafted some high-end skill players up front, and then got, I mean, they've had really good coaches, the Coyotes, actually. I mean, Dave Tippett, Rick Tocchet's probably going to win Coach of the Year in the NHL this year. But yeah, Bear perfect for a younger team like this. He talked after the game last night.
Honestly, I think I was more nervous for that game than the gold medal last year. I did really want our player to play a hell of a game for our fans. I think it was it's a place we really enjoy. The Valley here, the fans were great. We enjoy living here. We enjoy being here. And we did, the coaches, the management, the player, everybody wanted to finish that on the positive note and give a really, really strong effort to our fans, and really proud against the top team the way we showed up.
Yeah, they beat Edmonton again. They've done that twice in the last.
I mean, the
teams they went through, I think, what did they finish the season? 5-2 in their last seven with this hanging over them? And they were all wins over good teams.
Yeah, you know, it's weird as a player. Once again, you're conflicted on every side. And the reason being is because you're a mercenary yourself. You are. And you know you're a mercenary. You're playing at the highest level our species can generate. And many times that means being a pro, I'm going to have to get ready to move somewhere else, go somewhere else. My time here is done. I'm traded, whatever it may be. I'm cut. I'm a free agent. It's a mentality as a professional athlete you got and you have to have where you're going to go. You got to get ready to go. And yet at the same time, you think of your wife and you think of your kids for the most part, if you happen to be married and if you happen to have a family. You think of those two things, and let's face it, that supersedes you being a mercenary, and it always will. And if it doesn't, something's wrong, brother. Can we go get a cup of coffee? Because something's wrong. For me, it was gut-wrenching to watch my kids cry because they didn't want to leave St. Louis. They had no idea what Phoenix was, right? Yeah. We did, but they didn't. And it was so gut-wrenching for a couple of months until they actually got the opportunity to experience what Phoenix was going to be like. And all I can do is think of the players, man. The players. And Bear is the leader of men. And this organization has got a great coach going forward. I'm going to be a fan of this guy's, Andre Tourney's, for years to come because of the fact we got to know him a little bit on this show. And the man that he is, I respect greatly.
Here's more from Bear after the game.
Can you wrap your hands around the fact that you're never going to play again? Nope, not yet. Not yet. It's tough to imagine, you know what I mean? It's we closed Gila 2 years ago with a really good game. We came here, we had good time, and now it's I think it will become real. I don't know when we're in the future, but right now we try to focus on our last night here.
You know, to your point on the job he did and the impact it has on the players, this is not a veteran team. You know, there are some guys on this team that have been here for a few years. Lawson Krause comes to mind, that have been here for a while. Okay, they're invested in Scottsdale, but even Lawson Krause is a very old man. Like, he played in his, I think last night was his 504th NHL game. That's not, for a guy that doesn't miss many games, you know, you start to total that up. What is that, 6.5 years or whatever? And that's like the vet on the team. I told you, talking to Dylan Gunther after the game, Dylan Gunther's played like maybe 50 NHL games. For just on paper, he shouldn't have that much of an emotional tie to Phoenix, Arizona. He started this year in Tucson. He bounced all around last year. He was playing in a minor league team in Seattle. He was playing for Team Canada in the World Juniors. And he was like, no, we wanted to win this for fans in Arizona. And they played like it. That's the thing. It's one thing if you're like saying it ahead of time, but they played like it. And some of that is definitely a testament to Andre Turney. Text us your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. When we come back, how should the Cardinals be approaching the upcoming NFL draft? We're going to ask former NFL GM Mike Mayock joins us next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports league.
Yuck. The NFL draft. News on number 4. Draft coverage, live, local, late breaking.
All right, we've been talking a lot of NFL draft over the last few months, and we are now a week away. The first round's going to start a week from tonight. Joining us right now on the Arizona Sports Line is former NFL general manager Mike Mayock. Mike, thank you so much for the time. How's it going?
I'm doing great. I'm just all fired up to talk to you and your boy Wolf.
Oh, he's here. He's ready.
Yuck. How you doing, Yog?
I'm doing great, Wolf. I'm doing great. Good to hear your voice.
Man, I cannot thank you enough for joining us, especially this time of year, being a former general manager in the National Football League. What exactly is the hardest thing about being a GM, Yog?
Oh, boy. I mean, I think what people don't understand are a couple things. Number one, most GMs kind of grew up as scouts and are most comfortable evaluating talent, writing reports, stacking draft boards. But that's only a percentage of their overall job. And a lot of times you're kind of torn into multiple departments within the building, whether it's the medical side and the trainers, the strength coaches, et cetera, whether it's your coaching staff, managing injuries. There's business things that have to be dealt with. And ultimately, I think the bottom line and what took me by surprise a little bit is that, you know, not only is it 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, but it's also 365 days a year. And that's what, I mean, you're just never off, ever. Even when you're off, you're not off. Your phone's going to ring and somebody's going to be in trouble, or you got to get a workout done for some. I mean, it's just, that's the way it is. And that's cool. That's what you signed up for. And it's awesome.
We're talking to Mike Mayock. Mike, we heard Monty Austinford earlier today. He said they're about 95% of the way done with their big board. You know, as a GM, what is this process leading up to the draft behind the scenes where you would do it in a way where you'd feel prepared and kind of ready for anything on draft night?
Yeah, and it, you know, at the point where they are now, I'm sure Monty and the scouts are just, I'm sure Monty has a really firm grasp on what he wants to do, what he thinks he can get done. I'm sure he's already talked to a bunch of other NFL general managers about moving back, potentially up at different points in the draft, especially in that first round, as he explores ways to maximize what they have. I think one of the hardest exercises in this time frame is, to give you an example, say that depending on your grading scale, say that you've got a corner with a 6'8", a tackle with a 6'8", an off-the-ball linebacker with a 6'8", and a safety with a 6'8". In other words, all of them have identical grades. But you've got to stack your board. It's kind of easy to stack your board by position. It gets a little more nuanced as you stack your board, regardless of position, by grade. And then you've got to break up these stacks. You got a bunch of guys that are 6'8" that might be second or third round picks. And you've got to kind of figure out who fits the Cardinal culture the best. Is it the 6'8" guard better than the 6'8" edge rusher, even though edge rusher might be a higher position of around the NFL? Do we like this guard better than we like this edge rusher? And it engenders a lot of conversations, arguments, which I think are good, between scouts, coaches, and the entire building. And then ultimately you come out of it with a big board that everybody agrees with, And during the draft, you got to look at the board and says, that's what the draft says. That's how we evaluated the last 11 and a half months. So Monty's got his table full, and I think he's probably trying to clear the decks and clear his head to get ready for next week.
So, Yach, would you go ahead and actually orchestrate mock drafts? Would you do that? Would you do it yourself in-house leading up to the draft, or no?
Yes, I thought it was a great exercise. And the way I did it to try to make it as realistic as possible is say we're going to do a 2-round mock, and I would assign my scouts, each scout would have several teams, 3, 4, 5 NFL teams, along with our pro scouts who know the team needs obviously better than anybody of other NFL teams. And I would assign them all different teams, different groups of teams, and one mock draft, it might be okay. I want to see a minimum of 4 trades. Get your heads together. Call me with realistic trade things using realistic point charts.
Wow.
I want to get challenged on our 10-minute period in the first round or 7-minute period in the second. I want you to push me hard, and I want you to call the number 3 or 4 times at different points, trying to kind of maximize what we're getting done. And I had our analytics people. I had whoever I was going to be sitting next to in the draft room. And we would go through a bunch of different scenarios. And I sometimes get Coach Gruden in there, which I thought was really important because he and I had to talk through things. And the bottom line is, I think the more you do with that, the more you run an exhaustive search on what other teams before you and after you may do, it just forces you to it forced me to think some scenarios that I hadn't thought of myself.
Yeah.
And I found it very helpful.
We're talking to Mike Mayock. Mike, okay, I got to ask you, if you're the Cardinals, and yes, they have other needs, but they also have 6 picks in the top 90. If you're sitting there at number 4 and you're getting trade offers, but also Marvin Harrison Jr. is on the board, what would you do?
Well, let me give you a little bit of flavor of what could be going on in their building. Historically, coaches, head coaches, they like to squat on picks because they want the guy that's there at number 4.
Right?
They know what he is. And especially in a year like this where the first 3 are probably going to be quarterbacks, and your head coach knows that he can probably get them. They're the number 1 player in the country that's not a quarterback. That's coaches love that.
Yes.
The flip side are the GM. The GMs are sitting there going, man, I can trade down. I can pick up a couple second-rounders, first-rounders. We can get better in a hurry if we believe that we move down from 4 to, what's acceptable? 11, the Vikings?
Yeah.
Maybe only to 6? What are you prioritizing? Do you want Marvin Harrison Jr. or Odunze and nobody else? And if so, you know, if you have those 2 as 1-2, which they might, Malik Nabers I have in that same group, but depending on how he stacked his wideouts, you know, Monty could move down to 11 and already talk to every GM between 5 and 10 and have a possible trade structure in place to move back up, depending on how the draft moves. Are you willing to give up? If you move to 11, are you willing to concede that you might not be able to get either of the wideouts you treasure? So there are all these things going through. I really like what they did last year. I like what Monty did in free agency. I thought he beefed up the offensive line. I thought he did a really nice. He got the corner, Murphy Bunning, got a starting linebacker in Mac Wilson, 2 or 3 defensive linemen. I think he did a really nice job setting the table to move around the draft board in any way he sees fit. So the bottom line, it to me, is at some point, he's going to have to start loading up with the high level players. And if he's sitting there at 4, and if Marvin Harrison's their guy, the number 1 player on their board outside of a quarterback, and you don't want a Dunsey or you don't want Neighbors, there is absolutely nothing wrong with squatting on that pick and taking them.
Okay.
The flip side is Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, Yach, I've got to ask you this because I only got a minute left on the clock, but I got to ask you this right now. Mr. Former General Manager of the Raiders, Yach, if you had Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, those three guys right there in front of you, which one of those three guys would you want?
I just feel like, given the way Kyler Murray played with DeAndre Hopkins,
yes,
big, physical, strong, tough receiver, I'm guessing the way they look at it is Marvin Harrison 1, Odunze 2, Nabers 3. Mm. I happen to like Nabers better than Odunze. Because he's a different animal. He's a different athlete, quick, explosive, can play inside and out. That would be my stack, Harrison, Nabers, Odunze, but I'm not sure the Cardinals have it that way or not.
Mike, this was really insightful. Thank you for
Yach,
the time.
You're the best, man. Love you, buddy.
Great catching up with you guys. And hey, thanks for having me on. I miss you, Wolf. You're a good dude, bro.
And Craig says hello, man.
Please tell him I said hi. Another guy I miss.
Will do, Yach. Thank you, brother.
That was Mike Mayock.
See you guys.
Thank you, Mike. That's Mike Mayock joining us on the Arizona Sports Line right there. That was interesting to get kind of like, especially what he said there at the end. Like, this would be mine because he was an NFL GM,
very
so
cool.
Carry some weight. But this is what I'm expecting maybe the Cardinals are thinking. All right, enter to win an exclusive NFL draft experience. Just text DRAFT to 620-620 to enter for the chance to win a reserve table and $200 in food and beverage credit at Flanker's Kitchen and Sports Bar inside the BetMGM Sportsbook, all while having a front row seat at our live broadcast as we await the Cardinals' first pick. Again, text DRAFT to 620-620 right now. All right, when we come back, final segment of the show. Today sucks, and we'll explain why. That's next. It's the Wolf and Luke Show on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, everybody. Dan Bickley here, and on a Football Friday, we're going to consume ourselves with our basketball team in Game 1 in Minneapolis. Join us at 6 a.m. on Arizona Sports.
Well, Wolf, this is a show I really never hoped we would do.
Yeah. Kind of sucked buttermilk, didn't it?
Well, no offense. I mean, like, the show was good, I feel like. But the topic, every time we talk hockey, has been miserable here for the last few days. But especially today, because in case you're just joining us, they were kind enough to make it official during our show, too. So it didn't even get to just, like, finish grieving the loss of a team last night. As you and I are talking, the NHL in Utah are making it the sale official. So the Coyotes are on their way to Salt Lake City.
Luke, honestly, right now, we all know you work for the organization or worked for the organization. Where are you on this right now? You were talking a little bit earlier. We were talking to Dallas Drake, and you said you were having a hard time processing this. And Todd Walsh as well. Mm-hmm. You were talking to Todd. You said the same thing. How are you doing with this?
I'm trying to figure out what's next, but it's like almost too early for that.
Yeah.
I want to make sure there's still like hockey still has a voice in this city, but all I can think of is just the number of people that I basically consider family, and some of them like extended family, right? Some of them we don't see every game, but some of them I've been seeing every game, every single game for years and years and years. And a lot of them have no idea what's next. Like, are they going to leave part of their family here and try to get a job in Utah? Or if they want to stay in hockey, are they going to maybe try to get a job with Seattle or Boston or, you know, wherever? Like, it's people that have really established careers are basically starting their careers over. And it's not because of anything any of them did. That's the part I can't get
right,
by.
Like, right.
People, and some, I mean, you know, some of them, you know who I'm talking about with some of them that have been working in hockey for since the team got here. And in some cases, even before the team got here. And it's like, okay, they've established their lives. They have families, they have kids. Sometimes their kids have kids and they're like, okay, I guess I have to start my career over now. That's, it just is not fair.
Yeah, that's brutal right there. And of course, you were there, what, 2 o'clock in the morning last night? You were there?
It was like one of those, like, hey, let's just keep partying because once we go home, it's over. You know what I mean?
You didn't want to leave.
No.
And fans didn't want to leave either, right?
I had fans coming up to me in the parking lot at 1 o'clock in the morning being like, hey, you remember when this happened? Like, hey, this was so cool. Like, hey, what's so-and-so like? Like, yeah, that happens at least 20 times last night.
Yeah, but it was even in the arena as well, right?
The arena before the game.
Mullet, yeah, right? That was, the arena before the game. But also, I thought fans didn't want to leave after.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, when I finally went back to my car, there was still just a bunch of people in the parking lot or just kind of walking up and down right around Rio Salado and all that. Just, yeah, I mean, just a bunch of people in Coyotes jerseys. It really was kind of a like, hey, let's just, at least last night, there was a good collective vibe of let's remember this and enjoy tonight and remember all the good stuff. But now the reality that isn't great is going to start to sink in, I'm assuming, because it's sinking in for me. That's like, yeah, that was great. There's nothing in front of us when it comes to this.
Man, you know, it's so difficult for families, of course. But you know what's interesting about this? And we were talking to Dallas Drake about this very thing. For the players himself, for the players, it might be the easiest thing just to go ahead and say, we're mercenaries. We understand this.
All right. Well, we got a montage we put together that kind of commemorates the end of this run. Here it is.
That's probably the toughest part is leaving the fans. Obviously, what they've done for me and my family and how much they've supported the Coyotes over the years.
A lot of emotion, but at the same time, there's a little bit of sadness.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this task and don't ask why. It's not a question, but a lesson learned in time. Unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
My favorite quote in all of hockey, win today and we walk together forever. Well, the Coyotes, as you know, they never won a cup, but we went through a whole heck of a lot together.
Take the photographs and still frames in your mind. Hanging on a shelf in good health and good time. Tattoos and memories. Skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth all the while. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life.
Looking at all these people on the ice that clearly don't want to leave. I don't want to leave. You know, like a lot of you listening, this game, it's a part of me. It's been with me in some of the best times of my life. It's carried me through some of the toughest times in my life. And I know, as I say that, a lot of you feel the same way.
We had a good time, and now I think it will become real. I don't know when.
It's been difficult to be a Coyotes fan, and the ones that stuck it out and have been fans this whole time, it's such a testament to them.
Just a special place, you know, in my heart, and, you know, there's a lot of emotions for sure.
Something unpredictable, but in the end, that's right. I hope you had the time of your life.
It's been a wild ride this entire time, but everybody who experienced it is so happy that they did.
It's tough to kind of, you know, take it all in.
Something unpredictable, but in the end that's right. I hope you had the time of your life.
Nothing that happens in the coming days or weeks or months is going to change that. Nobody can take hockey from you.
Because we walk together forever as Coyote fans. And that's the story, really.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.